It is time now for Talking Books with Susan Brown, who joins us from the Chapel Hill Chapel Hill Public Library. It's the Carborough Library until they get the new one. Chapel Hill Public Library. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm great.
I'm good. Yeah, it's a great day. We're running around, like, in the couple of minutes before we start, trying to come up with the information that we need for the prompt. And we were doing so well until I turned the microphone on, and now I'm just all stressed out, and that prep just goes completely out the window. What's up?
You know, things are great.
Yeah.
It's so weirdly warm
outside.
I dropped my kiddo off to play basketball at the community center across the road, and the park is just full of people. There's just the playground. I mean, for months now, it's been empty, but there are a lot of people out enjoying this weather. It's kind of weird, though.
Yeah. It's going to be 80 tomorrow.
That's just insane.
Yeah.
That's totally crazy.
It's nuts. And then, 45 on Saturday again.
Right.
It's super cold, then it's super hot, then it's super cold again.
And what did the groundhog say?
Which groundhog is the question? You're not allowed to say that on the radio. Puckahuckanuckatuxy Phil said that we've got an early spring, which we clearly do, but Sir Walter Wally, I believe, said that we've got six more weeks. So.
Who is Sir Walter Wally?
The Raleigh groundhog.
Oh.
Yeah. Like there's more than one groundhog.
No, there's only one groundhog. Do we really have to go there on live radio?
Yes. There's no better place to go.
Did you watch Groundhog Day?
I have seen Groundhog Day. I did not watch it on Groundhog Day.
We watched it on Groundhog Eve.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's a family favorite.
Everyone gathers around the fireplace.
That's right.
Yeah. I've got one of my good friends from high school is very randomly close personal friends with Stephen Tobolowsky, who played Ned Ryerson in the movie.
Ned?
So on Groundhog Day, she posted a picture on Facebook of Steven sitting there with her two kids, and they're both wearing shirts with his face and the word Bing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It.
Yeah, he's apparently a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, weird weather, spring is coming, multiple groundhogs. What's happening at the library,
at
you
the
might
library?
Be wondering.
Yeah.
So, a couple things are happening at the CHPL.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, we launched this thing this week that people are pretty happy about. So, just this week, we launched something new. We now have automatic renewal of books. What, Susan Brown?
Awesome.
What on earth is automatic renewal of books?
I was just about to ask that.
So, basically, and a lot of places are doing this, if your items, books, DVDs, whatever, can be renewed, if there's no holds on them, we will go ahead and just renew them for you. You don't have to call us. You don't have to log on. Now, not everything can be. If things are on hold,
right.
I think new books, there's a couple of restrictions, but not many. But this is something that we've heard from our users, and we know from data, we spend a lot of time people calling in saying, can you check my books? Can you renew them? People, of course, have fines, and that can be a barrier. So like many libraries across the country, we're saying if your book can be renewed, we're going to let the machine renew it for you.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
That's like a whole new world.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
We are constantly figuring out ways to make it easy for the community that we serve and love to access and use the materials that we see, really as theirs.
Yeah.
These aren't our things. They're yours. So you should be able to use them and keep them as long as you need.
So does it apply to, e-materials like DVDs or CDs or audiobooks?
Well, so the downloadables all work a little bit differently.
Right, right, right.
So some of those, depending on the service that you're using and the item, and we're in a consortium for that, that will be a little bit different. But those don't actually accrue fines.
Well, right.
They just
so
get...
when I said e-materials, I didn't mean e-materials. That was me being stupid. I meant discs, like an audiobook or a DVD.
Oh, things on shiny round.
Shiny round things,
so,
yes.
Oh, boy, I should have come better prepared. My staff is probably going to text me. So I think the only things that don't automatically renew are things that are on hold and new books.
Okay.
So I think maybe DVDs. Oh, gosh,
DVDs
Aaron,
are...
why do I get on the radio and talk about these things? Why do
you
I
can
do
ask
this?
About DVDs. If you go to the
audiobooks
library,
do. Okay. Yes. CDs do. I just can't quite remember about DVDs where we landed on that. But probably any minute now, Daniel Seiler, marketing guy, is going to text me and be like, okay, here's how to set the record
But that's
straight.
Really awesome. Like, you go in and you check out a book from the stacks, and then, like, life gets in the way and you don't get to it. You can get an extra period of time.
Yep.
And that's fantastic.
And we don't really, we could always have more, but it's not like we are in a framework of scarcity. We've got lots of books on the shelves, and it's really easy for people to put a book on hold. So if you want to put a book on hold and get it back, it's super easy to do that. So there are ways to sort of, limit things and kind of turn the dials up and down.
Is it unlimited automatic renewals?
I believe it's
just
up to
one
three.
Time,
again,
three
why
times?
Do you ask me the specifics? Can't you just say great Susan
about
Brown?
It.
I know.
Great Susan Brown.
I should be prepared. I believe it's up to three.
Because like the whole kind of mentality with the public library is you hold a book after the expiration date or after the due date, and then you have to go and you pay your nickel, and that's part of the whole worldview of what the library is. This changes like a fundamental thing about.
Yes.
I should not be as excited about this as I am.
No, people are super
but it's
excited.
Really cool.
You're one of many. And I will also say that there's a national conversation going on about that very model that you just talked about, that whole punitive approach to all of this. And I'll just say, if I had my crystal ball, I would say that in 10 years, most libraries won't be charging fines.
Yeah.
There's a national movement that's just bubbling up this year. It's kind of been, there are some places that have gone fine free. Mm-hmm. A lot of places are doing things like we're doing with automatic renewals. There are some different models out there, but it's tied to the whole concept of what a public library is and should be. And there's also a sort of social justice angle.
Yeah.
There's an equity lens here. And as I tell people, if overdue fines worked as either a carrot or a stick, we wouldn't be taking in overdue fines, right? If they were effective as a carrot, people would bring their books back just because of that nickel.
Right.
And as a stick, people would pay that nickel and to keep coming back and using us, but it doesn't really work either way.
Yeah, and it's not like the fines are an important part of the financials.
Well, we're not
of the
a
library,
revenue
right?
generating, institution. So, anyways, that's a whole. We could do a whole show on that.
We
Aaron,
pretty
but
much
the
have.
Good news,
that was
I know,
awesome.
But the good news is that automatic renewals are a thing.
Cool.
So if your book is coming due, chill out. Do still check those notices because some things don't renew. So we're working on the email language and all that. So keep checking your account. But for most things, life is about to get a whole lot easier.
Awesome.
And then the other thing that I wanted to mention that Daniel Seiler, marketing dude, asked me to mention is we are doing a limited edition sale of t-shirts. So we did library t-shirts in the last year or so after we had our new logo and everything, and people love them. So thinking of Valentine's Day in the month of February, we are currently running, they're $15, they're long sleeve shirts, and we got so much positive reaction to our free bumper stickers this summer. These are iHeartBooks t-shirts, Chapel Hill Public Library. They're long sleeve, they're super nice, and they're only available to order until tomorrow. So if you're thinking about buying an iHeartBooks t-shirt from the Chapel Hill Public Library, you've got until 11:59 p.m. tomorrow night.
Cool.
I hope I got that right, Daniel Seiler, marketing
with,
dude.
Speaking with Susan Brown, Chapel Hill Public Library, chapelhillpubliclibrary.org for more information on the library, including more on all of that. Let's talk books. What are we talking about
this week?
Let's
do talk books.
This Week in History?
This Week in History.
Great. So what happened this week in history, and how does it inspire you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So this week in history, looking at this sheet, I noticed February 7th is cited as Frederick Douglass's birthday.
Yes.
So that really stuck out to me, in part because last year we did the celebration of the 200th anniversary of the birth or of his birth, and we had so many great programs. One program that we tried to do then but couldn't because the book wasn't out yet was bring an author named John Blight. who has a new biography of Frederick Douglass. So his book is now out, and I wanted to recommend it. It's called Frederick Douglass, Prophet of Freedom. And I think I said John Blight. It's David Blight. Mm. He is a wonderful biographer. I have not read the whole book because it's very long, and my attention span is very short these days. But I have read around in it, and it's really great because what it does is it takes Frederick Douglass and it sort of gives a human view of him. Like, this is, you know, there's like the man, the myth, the legend, and this is very much on the man, the human, the person. So it's a very expansive book, but it also feels very intimate. And John Blight is a wonderful author. So Frederick Douglass, Prophet of Freedom.
Awesome. So also born on this day were a number of really significant authors. Charles Dickens was born on February 7th. Laura Ingalls Wilder was born on February 7th. And Sinclair Lewis was born on February 7th. So his book, It Can't Happen Here, got a little bit of a spike in popularity after Donald Trump got elected. I'm not going to recommend that one. I am going to recommend Babbitt, which is my favorite Sinclair Lewis novel. It is, and I've read several. I went through a phase where I just tried to read as many as possible, and he's got a couple of good ones, but Babbitt is my favorite. It's about it's set in Ohio, and just a growing burg, like a couple hundred thousand people, like a Dayton kind of city, and it's about a guy who is just like a mid-level businessman in that community, and just the, it's not a sad life that he leads, it's just he completely buys into the system, and he allows that to completely shape his life and his worldview, and just the way in which that affects how he lives his life and sees the world. It's a really, really cool and fascinating and kind of sad, but also not necessarily depressing character study of this very likable person who just gets kind of sucked into a world that he probably shouldn't have been sucked into. And it's so relevant to today. Like, Sinclair Lewis's writing is so still to this day. You can read it and see yourself in it for better or worse. But Babbitt is one of my favorites.
And I love that when you have those sort of early 20th century authors who some people might feel like, you know, they were such a product of their time,
yeah,
and the writing style. How could it possibly be relevant? And then you read it and it's like, holy cow,
yeah,
this could be today.
This is today.
Right?
This is tomorrow. Yeah, this is a conversation that I had last week with
right.
this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Okay, so when I was looking at what happened this week, Saturday, February 9th, in 1775, the British Parliament declared the Massachusetts colony to be in a state of rebellion.
Woohoo!
Yeah, go Massachusetts. So then I was thinking about books set in Massachusetts, and I want to recommend one author and two of her books. So the author is Kathleen Kent. I feel like she's a little bit underread, and more people should read her and know about her. So she's written, I think, four or five books. The two that I want to mention are both historical fiction, which I love to read, and I'm a little bit obsessed about the Salem witch trials. So Salem, Massachusetts, the first one is called The Heretic's Daughter, and it's a sort of intergenerational story that is connected to the Salem witch trials. It's about a mother and a daughter who are sort of caught up in this sort of hysteria surrounding all of that. And it's just a really, really great book if you like stories of mothers and daughters and historical fiction and learning about that sort of whole Puritan state of mind. And then the follow-up to that, so that one was The Heretic's Daughter, and then the follow-up to that was The Traitor's Wife. It was also published as The Wolves of Andover, and it's a follow-up to, it continues the story of that family, that whole thing sort of after the witch trials, what happens, and it gets into all kinds of things. What's cool about her, the author, Kathleen Kent, is like a 12th generation descendant of historical characters that she's writing about who were actually caught up in the witch trial. So she knows of what she speaks.
Cool.
If you like, you know, books where the setting is a character or historical fiction, Kathleen Kent, both of those books are excellent.
Also on Saturday, February 9th, and speaking of witch hunts, in 1950, Joseph McCarthy addresses a group of people, a Republican women's club, and makes the first announcement that he's got a list of members of the State Department who are avowed communists, and it's a varying number every single time he makes the speech, and he's waving a piece of paper in the hand, which no one ever gets to see, and that's the beginning of McCarthyism and the Red Scare and the witch hunts of the 1950s, also on that same day in history. So I'm going to recommend a book that I think I've recommended before, which is David Halberstam's book on the 50s, which is called The 50s. And it's this, again, really comprehensive, but not, and it's long, but it's a fast read. And it's just this comprehensive look at the entire 1950s as experienced by people who were living through it at the time. And there's so many really cool little details in the way that he ties different things and developments together, and just conversations that I have and things that I see in the world, you see how they begin or how they go back to things that happened in the 1950s. I was just talking with my students about the civil rights movement and about the extent to which the civil rights movement in the 50s, a lot of that begins with the notion, or the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the ban on discrimination in public accommodations like restaurants and hotels. A lot of the push for an anti-discrimination ban in hotels starts with the fact that families started going on family vacations in the 1950s. This is when you have McDonald's forming for people who are in an unusual part of the country and they don't recognize any of the restaurants, but you can go into McDonald's and know what you're getting. Holiday Inns become a thing in the 1950s because people are traveling all over the country. And then you've got this very large group of people in America who cannot travel because if they go into certain parts of the country, they can't find anywhere to eat, they can't find anywhere to stay the night. And the family vacation becomes such a big thing that comes to be thought of as a right, something that we all have a right to. And that's part of the movement that ultimately leads to the Civil Rights Act. And all of that is from the 50s. And that's one chapter of this much larger book that also includes McCarthyism and television and sports and everything else. It's a really fascinating story.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
So I have to say, that's one that I remember, like, I picked that book up soon after it came out, like, at a secondhand shop or like a half price mm-hmm. books thing, and it sat on my shelf, but I would always pick it up and like find a chapter to just zip through.
You could just zip through it.
Had a black
yeah.
cover with like red, white, and blue kind of writing on it.
Still
it was
does.
A really,
yeah.
really still does.
Yeah.
Good.
The copy I have is exactly the same.
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. That's a great book.
Yeah.
So do we
We've
have
got time for one more.
For
yeah,
one
go
more.
For it.
Okay. So I wanted to point out today, Wednesday, February 6th, on February 6th, 1971, Mike's Grocery, a mom and pop store in Wilmington, was firebombed and burned. Mm-hmm. This was what the Wilmington 10 were convicted of. So I wanted to mention, we actually had this author at the library when this book came out. He's at UNC. He might be at Central. I forget. I think he's at UNC. Kenneth Jenkin. Have you ever had him on the show?
I don't think so.
Kenneth Robert Jenkin, and the book is called The Wilmington 10, Violence and Justice and the Rise of Black Politics in the 1970s. So this is a really interesting book all about the Wilmington 10 and sort of connecting it to this larger framework of civil rights and mm-hmm. the Black Power movement and the sort of earliest political organizing. It's a really good book, and he's right here in town, and he came and gave a great talk a couple years ago.
And speaking of the Wilmington 10 and local authors, Tim Tyson,
that's
Blood
right.
Done Signed My Name, which ends with the Wilmington 10.
That's
so you can
right.
read that, finish it, and then pick up the other book.
Yeah.
That's great.
A lot of
Who's
things
the author?
Happened
Kenneth,
this week. Kenneth Jenkin.
Jenkin. There
yes.
you go. Very cool. Everything happened this
that's
week.
That's right.
And that is Talkin' Books for this week. Susan Brown, thank you so much.
Thank you.